As you can see, I'm currently editing this podcast that you are about to listen to. This is Christian and Ashley coming straight at you with rooftop recovery, yoga. Actually, they're just talking about rooftop restaurants. But yoga, recovery, having fun and sobriety, and all good things recovery. Check it out. This is The Most High Show.
Welcome to The Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is The Most High Show.
So how long have you been doing, we are kind of, now we're in, now this is it. There's no turning back now. Yeah.
Oh, we're live.
Yeah. So, first off, tell me the story about the hat.
The hat is, just because I'm sober doesn't mean I can't be wild and crazy and express myself in other ways. So I'm actually a vintage collector. I started collecting vintage in sobriety, and it's a hobby and it's fun for me. And so I go junking and I find like cheap records. I love a good garage sale. And this was my latest find in Echo Park.
Oh, yeah. At a garage sale?
I got this at a little cute store and I saw it and I was like, I have to have it. So
yeah, she had
thrifty stuff, vintage.
Yeah. It almost looks plastic. At least on camera, it looks like it's like a solid piece of plastic.
Like, does it look like a plastic, like, Smokey the Bear hat?
Yes. That's it.
Like I'm a park ranger, which is like very needed out here because we had a lot of fires. So
yes,
this is my Smokey.
Yeah. We need more Smokey the Bears out there to get these fires.
I'm ready.
Yeah. So you're in, kind of our old hometown. It's been a long time since, we lived there, and, you're in Hollywood, right?
I am in the heart of Hollywood, and I actually got sober in the heart of Hollywood, and that just goes to show you can get sober wherever.
Yeah. So, yeah, when I moved to Los Angeles, I was sort of sober, but I was allowing myself to drink again, right? And I had never done any step work or anything. I had a spiritual experience, and I thought, okay, well, I'm good, right? I got this.
Right.
And I started drinking in L.A. and then started playing in a band. And we were doing shows, 3 or 4 shows a week, and practicing, and then I was working in Hollywood, and so I was very much, it was all ego, and and it didn't take long until I started doing hard drugs again, and so, L.A. for a while was a harder place to come back to and visit in sobriety, because of all those kind of memories. But I have participated in some meetings when I do go down there, and and there's some really good meetings. So
for sure.
Yeah, haven't been to any in Hollywood, but did you? So when you got sober, did you go to a rehab? Did you go away for some time, or what was that process like?
I did. I am the kind of alcoholic, the real deal, that has to be separated from the substance. Completely. I love that people can get sober by just walking in the doors. That is not my story. I went to treatment for 4 months and I needed to be removed from the substance. Cause I don't think I was really over that obsession. Obviously, you know, I hats off again to people that can just say, I'm done. I'm going to, that's not my experience, but, I totally get like I call it like soiled area. Like I got sober in Hollywood and this is like, it's not tainted, right? This is like my sober hub. Now there's some areas in the US that like I feel funny about going to. New York City is one of them because it's tainted with bad stuff, and LA is like tainted with rebirth and recovery here.
Yeah.
And I get that.
Yeah, totally. And then, you know, it's like what they say, like everywhere you go, there you are, right? So
geographical changes, guilty.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I did. When I moved to LA, when I moved from LA to Atlanta, I thought, okay, well, I'll move to Atlanta and I'll be better, right? The dope man used to pull up on a little scooter, and it was 15 minutes away anytime. And I thought, okay, if I move out of LA, then I'll get sober, and I won't have this issue anymore. And I moved out here to Atlanta, and I was sober from drugs for about 4 months, and then got into, you know, it just took me time. I found my people, and I started getting back up. Yeah.
Sure. That's so interesting, you know, and I find that with a lot of people that maybe they're abstinent from drugs, but maybe they keep pot around or alcohol around, and that isn't my truth. I know that I have to work a program of abstinence. If I say just smoke weed, and my disease will tell me, like, maybe you should smoke a joint today. Even though I hate weed, I get paranoid and, like, I call the cops on myself because I think I'm dying. I can't mess around with, like, any substance that's other than alcohol, because my experience, it always brings me back to the alcohol.
Right.
And so I think it's very interesting. The substitution with another substance is a real thing. And I think it's, for me, I have an experience. It's a gateway back to my drug of choice, to alcohol, because they're kind of like, oh, screw it. I'm already like doing this. I'm not working a program of abstinence. So
right.
Who cares? I'm going to go back to drinking, you know?
Yeah. I have a really good friend who has done that substitution. And for him, he's much healthier now that he's not drinking. Good. And he is just smoking pot. You know, I guess the term is California sober.
Some people can do it, and that's like amazing. You know what I mean? I'm like, how do you do that? Because like, I will do anything. Like, I will snort sugar off my kitchen counter. You know what
right.
I mean? Like,
right.
That's my journey.
Right. Well, yeah, and then there's a concept that you know, I've been thinking about, and that's it's the concept, we use that term alcoholic, right? But I think what it really is describing is a spiritual malady, a spiritual condition that some of us have been put into. And I think some people drink alcoholically, and I think alcohol is a problem in their life. But they don't have this same spiritual condition that potentially you and I might have, which is I will abuse anything and everything. I will abuse Pepsi. I will abuse my ego. You know, working, I have the tendency to become addicted to so many different things. If I find something that's fun that I really like, I'll find myself wanting to do that all the time. Right.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And so I think it's almost like a different condition that we have. And,
sure.
I tried it, you know, I tried to just, but it for me, I ruined pot for me, you know. Like, there are times like at Christmas, you know, family holidays, where I think, wow, this would be really nice to be able just to smoke some weed and just hang out. But I've ruined that, you know, and I know that I would get that escape. The world would become a place that I enjoy again, and I would want that back. Right. And I would be searching for that in one way or another. And it's just not, I'm not willing to go through that, because rehab and working the steps early on is not as easy. It's not that easy. And I don't want to go through that again. Yeah.
Right. I love that, you know, and I just think the spiritual malady, I'm like obsessed with like exploring and really understanding the spiritual malady.
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting, and I don't think people discuss it enough. I know for me, like you were saying, I can become like extremely into something, a lot of things, like anything that takes me out of myself. I could go to a thrift store and get that like monumental high of like finding a cool hat. You know what I mean? Or I'll pretty much do anything to distract myself and to not be with myself, even in sobriety, you know, and seeking validation from relationships, codependency, extreme interest in like hobbies. And so I think it's interesting that the spiritual malady, if it's not getting what it really wants, like alcohol or dope, it's going to find other outlets, you know? And I just think it's so important to nurture that spiritual malady and really pay attention to it.
You know, I had some feedback once on our podcast, and the feedback was, you know what I really love about your podcast is you always say, oh, we'll edit that out. And he said he loved that we never edited out. It's always like us messing up and then going, we should edit that out. So
I mean, can I edit my 20s? Can we edit my 20s right. out? Because I would love a redo.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I was, you know, I had that thought. It's interesting you mentioned that because that was like, those were the years that I gave that up to drugs and alcohol, you know, and I have 9 years, just celebrated 9 years. And amazing. I thank you. And I have some friends that are, you know, 20 plus years. And I find myself subconsciously comparing myself to them. I'm like, mm-hmm. and it's not like envious, but I can sometimes be like, okay, I need to be able to do this. And I got to think that like, okay, they got like, you know, number one, they got sober in their 20s, right? So they got all this right. legwork and time to rebuild their life. And I've only really I've only had these 9 years, and so I need more time to be able to continue to rebuild, and it's going to take me time to do that. Sure. Yeah.
Well, in all reality, we have today. I know it's a cliche, but my 20s. It's interesting. I didn't start drinking until I was about 20, 21, maybe 22. Now my alcoholism manifested in other ways earlier on. I couldn't handle anything emotionally. I didn't have coping skills. I was an emotionally out of control junior high schooler. I was a chronic monogamous relationship, seeking validation from that boyfriend of 4 years. And so it was only a matter of time when I found something like, this is it. You know what I mean? And I believe I was an alcoholic from the second I drank, I didn't have that invisible line period where it was like fun and then like it got nasty. I was nasty from the start. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it was brutal. I had negative consequences immediately. And it's funny, like no matter how negative the consequences, like I'm the kind of person that's like, oh, okay, well maybe I won't do that, but I'll do this. Like substitution's a big part of my story and those geographical changes. And somebody told me once, some people have a higher pain tolerance than others. Mm. And that really hit me. I will like get myself in so much pain, you know, emotional, spiritual, but I can't give it up, the alcohol. And I think some people like have a bad night, they get sober young, they're done. Others, I think, have a higher like pain tolerance, like where we just stay around, you know, and until like we're just bankrupt, you know. So yeah. I find that really interesting.
Yeah. So and in tying that to your spiritual malady, right? Like, how do you think that ties to like to your spiritual malady, to that need? What do you think was under that for you that you were willing to accept that pain?
I think it's a lot of things. You know, I grew up in the church. I grew up in the Baptist church growing up, loved youth group, loved the connections, loved going to all like the functions and the activities. I did mission trips. And I think for me, it was knowing everything about God, but not experiencing him. Mm. You know, it wasn't until I got sober that I started experiencing the power of God or my higher power. And I think that's huge. I think I didn't understand that God can be a loving, all-encompassing, or your higher power could be rad. You know what I mean? Like, whatever you want it to be. Like, he can be rad as hell. Like,
right.
I talk to my higher power, and I'm like, we're playing a chess game here today, God. Like, you know, you're moving this piece, and I want to move this piece, but you're checking me. You know what I mean? And that's how I talk to my higher power today. But I think a lot of it comes from guilt and shame, and we don't talk about that enough. Alcoholism can strip me down to make me feel worthless and like nothing. And I think you get in that cycle of, I don't want to feel shit about myself, so I'm going to drink to cover it up. And then that brings more shit. And so I'm going to drink to cover that up. And you get into this like vicious cycle of, that's what you think your life is and you deserve that. And then all of a sudden it's like, I don't want to live anymore. You know what I mean? And so I just think getting rid of all prejudices, like getting stripped away from everything and having to focus on something bigger than you, whether it's the rooms, whether it's the earth, whatever, you know?
Yeah, that ultimately, just as long as it's not you. But, you know, there's something very, at least for me, comforting about the pain, right? And about that darkness. Yeah. And that's mm-hmm. something that's that I think I continue to combat, because mentally I can have those dark moments, dark thoughts, and there's still something comforting about that. And I just, it's interesting that a lot of us just get comfortable there in that pain. And maybe mm-hmm. it is part of, I deserve this, you know, and, right. Receiving love and grace. Like, I put myself down on the fourth step, you know, and I put myself down on my ninth step because, mm-hmm. you know, I need to make an amends to myself. And,
absolutely.
Yeah. And whatever language, there's a lot of, go ahead.
Oh no, it's so interesting. I mean, I can go down, I call it like sober stoner talks. I go down these rabbit holes.
Oh gosh, let's go.
It, you know what I mean?
Like, let's go.
Me and my friend can be like, why do dogs have, you know, weird shaped mouths? And we're like, all of a sudden we're talking about, I don't know, it gets weird, but love it. It's interesting. I think that like those negative feelings become comfortable to us because it validates all of our bullshit that like our head tells us, those messages mm-hmm. that we receive from a very young age in childhood. Somebody calls you a name, a bully, you know, a kid says that you're fat. Well, then all of a sudden you seek out validation that that's true because yeah. you're owning that. And we hold on to what negative things people tell us. I can tell you, I can tell you sometimes all the negative stuff this person told me, but I can't remember the positive. And I keep seeking out situations and people and relationships that say, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
And like, what? Why? Because I'm comfortable with feeling like shit. It's easier to feel bad about myself than nurture that inner child and say, not today, core issue, not today.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with that.
Oh, that's really good. That is true. It's something about it that we get comfortable. There's a concept called the negative confirmation. Or not, it's called the negative bias that our brain mm-hmm. has. Have you heard of that? Uh-huh. And so,
no, maybe it wasn't. I think I know what you're talking about.
So the negative bias is, you know, neuroscience kind of going through our brains and watching our brain activity and can tell that negative, and some of this is survival mechanism, right? Like, a negative experience imprints on our brain immediately, right? And some of that survival, where it's like, you know, my cousin Timmy got killed by a bear in that cave. Let's not go in that cave, right? So the brain is wired right. for survival, and it's going to tell you that's a dangerous thing. So negative experience, negative conversations, these kind of things imprint on our brain instantly. Positive things, right? If you're just putting it in the framework of negative and positive, as if there's only negative and positive, but I'm digressing from that. Anyway, if you have this positive experience, that it takes your mind much longer for that to seep in, which is why we can have a fairly good day and you get an email or a text message, or you have a negative conversation with someone. And when you go to lay down in bed, the only memory you have of the day is that negative conversation, right? Yeah. Like if you think about the, like, just looking into someone's eyes or a child's eyes or an animal's eyes, you know, such an amazing experience that is, but yet that doesn't imprint on us like a negative email will. Right. And so it's something right. that our brains are kind of wired to do. And,
sure.
and I think a spiritual solution is the only way to really conquer
Absolutely.
That.
And it's simple tools, like, you know, a gratitude list. You know, if something happened to me, I'll do a quick gratitude list. I will write like 10 things down that I'm stoked about. It's sunny outside. I have an apartment. Like, I'm sober. And like, that tends to pull me out of it.
Yeah.
Or I'll do a stream of consciousness. I'll just write and I will like kill that situation on paper. I will be like, this makes me mad. I'm furious. And like, it'll get more intense as you write, and then you'll feel better afterwards. And so I love little tools like that, that can help my change perception. Cause right, I have a disease of perception.
Yeah.
And anything that pulls me out of that is useful.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get into a little bit of your yoga practitioner and teacher, right?
Yeah.
And the thing I love about that, and you're connecting it to your recovery. And so what I want you to talk to me about a little bit is how these things connect, right? The physical body with this spiritual experience and this mind shift, right? This perception shift and how those connect. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Yeah.
Sure. I think it starts out with, like, spirituality can be super fun and it's very approachable. I know that sometimes when I go to yoga classes and they're using all the Sanskrit lingo and it's very serious to me. And I wanted to make yoga, spirituality, all that mind, body, spirit connection approachable and easy and fun. So my company is 4DAF. You can put it together. It's fourth dimension. And the AF there is like, you can be Zen AF. Like, you can be a rad person. Like, you can let that shit go, man. You know? Mm-hmm. So it's all about like this quirky way of saying, like, my higher power cusses sometimes and it's cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have to be so serious, like a monk or like a Buddha and like, and embody all of this stuff. There's so much pressure there. Yeah. You know what I mean? To be this upstanding, most spiritual guru person and everything's kosher. Right. So I tend to bring a different approach to my yoga. We have fun. You know what I mean? Like, I'll go in and I'll think that we're going to do yoga. I teach at rehabs, a lot of them. And I teach privates and private groups, sober livings and whatnot. But I'll go in and like, I'll feel the vibe that like, we're not ready to flow today. We're going to do some gratitude work and I'll do something like that. Or I'll say, you know what, tonight we're going to do a sound bath and stargaze. And anything that can get people stoked about some aspect of spirituality, whether it's flowing, and my little punchline is like, keep the yoga flowing, not the drink, right?
Right.
So if we can go hike and get outdoors and like have a sound bath or like watch a sunrise or do some cool yoga flowing or like stream of consciousness writing or like we do some inner child work, like all of it is like so approachable and needs to be approachable, especially for those people that are new in sobriety. We have to make like spirituality fun. And that's what I do. I think it's so important, you know, speaking of the spiritual malady is having like a new experience with spirituality. I knew for me, again, coming from the church, I had to have a new experience, right? Because my spirituality, my faith before wasn't sufficient enough to abstain sobriety.
Yeah.
So something had to change, right? I didn't know what it was, but it had to change. And they're all linked because it comes back to having fun in sobriety. I didn't get sober to not have fun.
Right.
I didn't get sober to not go on a cool hike. And the mind, you know, when we do things physically, the mind calms down.
Yeah.
If I'm doing something with my hands mindfully, like washing the dishes, I'm big into art projects. If I'm doing something with my hands, my mind shuts down. If I'm in community, the fellowship, other people doing the same thing I'm doing, my mind shuts down. I'm focusing on other people.
Yeah.
And I think the physical part, right, we're replacing dopamine. My dopamines got robbed. Like, they were out of control when I got sober. How am I gonna boost those endorphins, like those that dopamine? How am I gonna create new neural pathways? My neural pathway says this: drink, reward, drink, reward. I have to change my habits. I have to say, wow, meditation, reward. I feel good. I feel in sync with my body. Like, I am feeling alive and I'm feeling centered. And those neural pathways are so crucial. And you can get that from like activities like sound bath, yoga, hike. And I think that's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. The connecting the physical with the spiritual. And I think what you said, I think really for me is true, like that concept of knowing God, or at least thinking I know God, right? And then experiencing it is totally different. Like, and it took me a long time in my sobriety to get to a point where I was actually going, oh, I haven't really been experiencing. I've been experiencing my ego's interpretation of what it thinks God is.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But not actual, you know? And right. I heard recently from a spiritual teacher, they said that, and oftentimes when we're praying, we're asking for things, and that God gives us, God gives us God. That the answer is itself, whatever it is, that is the answer, is God. And I thought that was so... that was so humbling, because a lot of times that is us when we're drinking and we're drugging and we can't stop and we shout those prayers out, God, help me, take this from me. But yet it doesn't, right? And we're still stuck, right? And so
I love that.
Yeah, those steps are so hard because we don't, in our mind, we want the solution, right? But the solution is God himself or itself. And and a lot of us aren't willing, ready to get that. So, yeah.
I love that. No, I love all that. I think it's amazing. Yeah, that's cool. I like that saying. I like that point that, like, what we're searching for is already there and in us.
Yeah.
It's your higher power working through us. He's already there.
Right.
And I love the saying that, like, you're searching for answers you already know.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's rad. You know what I mean? And what keeps me sober is, how rad is it to be spiritually woke? Like, be spiritually awake and aware to, like, see the higher power, the universe, God. I'm a spiritual Christian, so I call it God. Working in other people's lives, seeing people get sobriety. And I know it's so rad. I don't believe in coincidences, and I know in the big book it says, coincidence, we think not, right? I believe that everything is divinely inspired.
Right.
I'm an example of it. Like, there's no way I should be sober, man. I'm an alcoholic. I feel like, you know, looking back, I may not always see God work in the moment, but looking back in hindsight, I can see him all over my story. I can see him all over your story.
Yeah.
And I think that's what keeps me coming back, is like super rad stuff. It's like you go to the grocery store and you see somebody, then all of a sudden a week later, they're in your meeting, they're in an AA meeting. And it's like, oh, you know, I had a run in with you at the grocery store a couple weeks ago and now you're in my meeting.
Yeah.
That's not a coincidence.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's so cool. And I think once you stay around enough to get that spiritual awareness, it'll be like any other drunk or high you have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, for me, the focus is, cause I'm like what you said, like, I can see it in the past. Like, I can look back and see it even yesterday, you know, or 2 hours ago, but trying to get to a place where I can actually see it while it's happening, you know, and I believe that. That's possible. And that's why I like that you're using these physical things, right? Like yoga, like painting, like a sound bath, this physical component to the spirituality, which seems to ground this ethereal thing that a lot of us think it is, right? I mean, at least early for me, that's what I thought it was. It, you know, there's a spiritual realm over here, and sometimes I get into it, you know, but when you're tying these physical components to it, I think it's really good. And you're doing this, and you're doing these on Zoom now, right? Because of the whole COVID thing.
Yeah. And I don't love it, you know, because it kind of misses the connection. There's a certain vibration in the room, a sense like this vibe in the room when you get like a bunch of people together, like even if it's five people, it's electric, and you can feel the presence of like a higher power, like God, in that room,
right?
You know what I mean? And it's just intense, and I miss it. And I think a lot of people in recovery do. And if you stayed sober through the quarantine, you're amazing. And I love you. Like, good job. Pat yourself on the back, because it's isolating. And I don't know about you, my disease thrives on isolation.
Oh, yeah.
So I do things on Zoom, but like, I'll give people like, hey, let's go outside with our phones if you're on Zoom, and I want you to take your shoes off and ground into the earth. Feel the grass on your feet. I'm big with tactile changes. Again, it's that physical.
Yeah.
If I have anxiety, I'll change my sensation. I'll hold ice cubes. If I need to ground because I'm not feeling present, I'll go outside and like dig my feet into like the grass.
Yeah.
And feel that. And again, that's all physical. That's all something that like I can tangibly hold. that's going to change the way I feel. That's not bad for me.
Yeah. Well, let's back up a little bit, because I think that's a really good point. This, when you have anxiety, you hold ice cubes. And how does that, and that works for you? It seems so simple,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know, I struggle with general anxiety disorder. I struggle with clinical depression. I'll be honest, I am bipolar one. So I feel things intensely. And I really had to work on my emotional sobriety in recovery. And that is a whole other thing, because I can be sober from the drink, but I could be so crazy emotionally where like, I am like, ooh, you would think I'm drinking, right? So for me, I had to find things that like worked and coping skills. And I found that like changing, like holding an ice cube kind of shocks my body and to like snap out of it.
Yeah.
Cold water on my face. Hot tea. That's another sensation. It's warmth in my mouth. You know, taking a bubble bath, like that's calming. Essential oils. I ground into the earth all the time, and people look at like I'm crazy. And I'm like, I'm gonna take my shoes off and I'm gonna go stand in those woods or that piece of grass on your lawn.
Yeah.
And like feel something. I'm big on ways to cope that like that maybe are outside of me, but they shift something inside of me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were talking about that vibe that you feel in the room when everyone's in there doing yoga. And somebody was telling me about the electromagnetic field that your heart produces. It's like two times the electromagnetic field of your brain. And your brain is an actual bunch of electrons firing off, right? So it's like actual electricity in there. Right. But your heart puts out this measurable, right, electromagnetic field. And then that's how, like, when we walk into a room, we can feel the vibe of somebody right away, right? We can tell if they're not happy, right? And so when you have all these, everyone's doing the same physical pose, and everyone's kind of looking, or at least going in the same direction, that energy can become harmonious. Right?
Oh, sure.
And there's power in that. So I think I'm convincing myself to do yoga, although I've never really done it. I had an addictionologist tell me to do yoga once, and I can't remember the pose. It was something about like my legs up and my legs on the ground and my hands on the ground or something like that. And she said, because your brain thinks the tiger's chasing you. And when you're in this pose, there's no way you're going to be in this pose if a tiger's chasing you. And so it's rewiring your brain. So, cool. It is deep, right? She's the ball. She's out here though. So,
That
and then,
so cool.
So let's get to like kind of wrapping up here. Cause we try to keep these around 30 minutes. But this has been great. Like, probably the greatest gift of doing this podcast is meeting people, you know, and connecting with people. And then we just, it's like, you know, we really don't have this strict script. We kind of have an idea what we want to talk about. But what's cool is that we can just start talking and connecting. And there's so much commonality that we learn from each other. We connect. And that's probably been the greatest gift of doing this podcast. This is like meeting people that you're like, wow, it's like, I don't know you, but I feel like I know you, you know? And that's just, it's the gift of the community of recovery, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I love what you guys are doing. And I'm big on, there's a stigma about mental health and addiction that we really need to speak out and say, I was a film costume designer. I did all this cool stuff in high school and I drank. And I talk about that stuff because when I get authentic and vulnerable, I love when Brene Brown says it takes courage to be vulnerable. And I tell you my story and I tell you when I'm not okay. It gives you permission to say that you're not okay.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay to not be okay. And as long as we keep having that connection and speaking out and saying, I'm having a horrible day, and someone's like, me too. That's cool because we don't talk about that stuff. And I think it's so important what you guys are doing, having people on and making that connection, and not only addicts connecting with each other, but like other people seeing this and being like,
yeah,
wow, I didn't know all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. and the mental health thing is a lot of us have that kind of dual diagnosis situation going on. And, there's a lot of biological things like imbalance in hormones that can be going on, especially with opioid users. There's a lot of evidence now that shows that people who are habitual users of opiates, it can throw off their pituitary gland, which throws off their whole endocrine system. And then their hormones are off balance. And so then they have symptoms like depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And they may be working an honest program and trying their best, but when their body is out of alignment, right? And they're going to a doctor who's not testing and checking for those things. And then they're getting put on some sort of prescription. And it's just, it's an endless cycle. And unfortunately, in like not a lot of doctors are doing those tests, right? Or checking, like doing a hormone panel. And most, I think, you know, most insurances will allow you to do it at least once, you know, if not once a year, you know. But I really... Yeah. That was a biological solution for me, which was eye-opening from seeing an addictionologist, that she said, you know, here's this thing. You're experiencing depressive symptoms because you have a hormone imbalance. And that's from just, you know, doing drugs for years and years and years, you know. So.
Sure. It's interesting because a lot of people are like, oh, you're depressed and anxious because alcohol is a depressant. And then I'm like, no, I self-medicated with alcohol because I'm anxious and depressed. Like, it's a chicken before the egg thing.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I'm anxious and depressed. Who cares? You know what I mean? But let's find a solution.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Find a solution for it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what made you drink alcohol. You're an alcoholic. You know what I mean? And I think we get tripped up with the semantics. And I love that they do a panel because that's really cool to make sure that you are properly medicated. And I'm for being medicated with non-addictive medications if you need them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing is like, we don't talk about that enough. And I guess it's kind of the gift and the curse of some of the rooms, you know, is that they're not doctors. And so they don't, you know, they really shouldn't be advising. And I have a couple sponsors that they'll say that. They'll say, you know, maybe you should, you know, or issues with my wife or whatever. They'll go, you know, maybe you need to get some counseling on that because that's above my pay grade, you know. And that's a gift of a good, competent sponsor who's willing to know, yeah, maybe you should see some professional about this instead of trying to tell me not to do this. And I think, you know, it's important. It's important to talk about because we don't know what each individual solution is, but I sure don't want someone suffering and being in a chronic relapse because they have some biological condition, right? Whether it's mental health diagnosis that's undiagnosed, you know, a lot of people exhibit symptoms, you know, because they're withdrawing from drugs or because they're using drugs. But some people, there's a legitimate thing going on and we have to address that. And so don't be ashamed to go to a good doctor, you know, to find an addictionologist. Addictionologists are coming. Right. There's more and more of them now than there was before. And so, you know, Googling and searching for a reputable addictionologist that can address these things. Cause an addictionologist is going to know, you know, putting me on, Adderall is might seem like a good decision for someone who's not an addictionologist, but I'm a cokehead. Right. So you put me on Adderall. I'm like, yeah, great. Yeah. I need to be on Adderall. Totally can't concentrate. Yeah. Right. And I will abuse that until I'm back to doing dope. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Cool. I love that. Well, you know, it's real quick. I know we have to go, but speaking of the hormone thing, when I started tracking my relapses, and this may be TMI, I realized it was around my menstrual cycle, right? And I could get 30 days menstrual cycle, and I'd drink to cope with like those hormones. I would feel depressed. I would feel anxious. I would feel rage during that time. And I did have that checked out. And I think that's important. And I've noticed a lot of women, that's very common.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Very funny.
Really? Yeah. I mean, of course, I'm not having those kind of conversations with women, but I would.
Well, I just went there.
Yeah, you did. You totally did.
I just went there for the shock and awe to see how you react. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, but you're right. Like, there's these, and that's the thing, you know, we have to talk about all of it, because it's all of us are experiencing that, and we know the gift of sobriety and the freedom we experience. And one of the gifts is being able to be on here with you and talking to you. And if they ever open California up again and we get out there, hopefully you and I can catch a taco. What's your favorite taco truck? Do you have one?
There used to be a good one on Pico by that David, like a La Cienega on Pico. That's uh-huh. really good.
Have you been to Australia's? Have you been to Australia in Eagle Rock?
No, but I think I need to.
Yeah. I always tell people it's worth the ticket to fly out there. Yeah.
I'm big into these rooftop restaurants right now because they're open because of COVID. I love to get dressed up because, right, I've been in yoga wear for 4 months. So it's been fun to hit these rooftop places, and they're kind of cool at night, like air-wise. So that's yeah. kind of been my jam lately.
Yeah, and they're open because they're outdoors, right? That's the only thing they're allowing right now in California.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were upset about it, but Georgia's pretty opened up, you know. And in mm-hmm. some ways, I'm really thankful for that because, you know, we were somewhere out to eat, and I just thought, wow, like, watching this waiter is working. The cook is working. We're able to sit here and eat. They're wearing masks. They're not seating, yeah. the whole restaurant's not full, but it was cool to see that, because I know that LA is suffering, especially that industry, the food industry, yeah. you know, because sure. they're not able to do that.
I had a geographical change. I lived in Atlanta for about 5 years, and I missed it, so that's cool. You're in Atlanta.
Yeah. You were out here, huh?
I was, and I love the Gwinnett meeting. Up in Gwinnett,
mm-hmm.
That was a cool meeting. I think the Triangle meeting, yep. there's good sobriety there.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right. Well, it's getting hot in the studio. I need to turn the air on because I'm like sweating underneath my man boobs. but this has been awesome. I'm so glad that we connected, and we're here for you. If you ever need it. And, you know, however we can help and be of service to you and promote your, and so you're the good thing about your yoga that it is on Zoom is that people right. can get to it from anywhere. Right.
Yeah. You can have an Instagram. It's at 4DAF yoga.
Yeah.
My personal Instagram is Ash Nico Allen, AshNicoAllen. Both of those are good to get in touch with me. But yeah, I mean, I'm whatever you guys need, I kind of go with the vibe of what you need. If you want to do yoga, great. We can work with different things.
You know what would be cool is if we did do that, if we can like combine together and did a yoga meeting where, you know, in one of our NEA meetings that we do, and then you led us in some yoga stuff and integrated the recovery to it. That'd be really cool.
Sure.
We should do it.
I would love that.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you guys so much. You're lovely, and I'm stoked about what you guys are doing.
Thank you. Appreciate it. You have a great day.
Stay sober.
All right. Bye.